This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit IMNCT.com for more information. Hey everybody, welcome back to Behind the Video. This is episode number 58, and joining me as always from his back porch in Los Angeles, California is Tim Street. Hey Tim.
Hey Lon, how are you, man?
How are you? How's the weather this morning?
It's a little overcast. At least it feels overcast, and but it's nice, cool summer morning.
And, looks nice.
There's people shooting videos all over. Well, you know, Southern California. What are you gonna do?
It's the drones. The drones are flying. So Tim, we have a guest this morning, and who is that?
Travis Ritchie. Say hi,
hello.
Travis.
Hello, hello, gentlemen. How are you?
We are great. So, Travis, tell us about what you're working on.
Well, currently we're in post-production for the prequel episode for season 2 of the Inspector Spacetime series, which I can't call that technically, I guess. So the untitled web series about a space traveler who can also travel through time. And we are fundraising for season 2.
Excellent. So,
in theory, I'm just curious here. In theory, if you were talking about another web series that might have similar issues to your series, let's say that somebody did a series about, I don't know, $6 Million Man, right? Mm-hmm. And explain how they might do that series in theory, that and what they might want to do to avoid some of the challenges you've had.
You know, honestly, I haven't had a whole lot of challenges. Initially we thought that we were writing something for community and for Sony to make, because it seemed like such an obvious idea that community is a show that does supplemental content, and NBC is a network that does supplemental content, and then we wrote the web series thinking that, okay, if I get back on the show, because I am Inspector Spacetime from Community, and if I get back on the show, I can pitch it, and if they don't have time to write their own web series, hey, we've got one for you, because that's what we do. But we didn't. You just can't do that, and you can't just hand a script to somebody. So it went through. We had to go through channels, and just got no response whatsoever. As far as the copyright concerns, we honestly didn't think it was going to be an issue, because fans were already out there making Inspector Spacetime merchandise and posters and t-shirts and iPhone cases and making money off of it. And we didn't want to make money off of it. We just said, you know, we just need money for production. Nobody's getting paid. We just want to do this, you know, this season, because it deserves to be made and fans want it. And it wasn't until I got just one call from a Sony lawyer saying they didn't want me to do that. And initially I was like, well, I mean, I think you guys should work with me on this, because look, people are giving us money, and you know, that's the language you guys talk, so listen. But when they essentially said they don't care, I said, okay, well, I'm not going to even fight with my favorite show even a little bit, so I'll change the title and change the look of the character to avoid, you know, issues.
Isn't this also like a parody of something else?
It's a parody of Doctor Who, but it's not the first Doctor Who parody that's ever existed. You know, and that's fairly common. Just like with, you know, any parody, there are protections under copyright law for parodies of shows. And as far as infringement of any kind, there isn't any. We don't use characters, we don't use names, we don't use, you know, it's all original content. It's just we take the tropes of something and we lampoon it a little bit, like Airplane would for disaster movies, or so in that respect it's not really an issue.
And there's some protection in the law too for satire, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's protection for parody and satire in U.S. copyright law, especially.
So now you're running a Kickstarter. So you had a Kickstarter for season one, which was successful, and now you're running a second Kickstarter. And
actually, this is our third.
A third Kickstarter. So what have you learned? As you know, what advice could you give to people looking? You know, maybe developed a bit of an audience. Is there any special kind of trick you need to do to make a Kickstarter work?
Oh boy, you know, I was exceedingly lucky for our first season Kickstarter because we already had the audience established, and they were hungry for this content, and so we just allowed them to give their money. I mean, it really was kind of a, you know, shut up and take my money type of situation. And so we said, okay, well, you know, if you guys want this web series enough to pay for it, we'll make it. And fans did. And then we the experiment was more in the second season prequel episode where we wanted to raise more money for less content in order to be able to pay the cast and crew. And so we raised for that one $10,000 for just one episode. And now here you can see the Kickstarter page for the season two season, which is a whole hour's worth of content, still six episodes, but it's much longer than our first season. And we have, I want to be able to pay my cast and crew. That's the big difference. But we also have some location rentals and stuff like that. So our budget is quite a bit bigger at $125,000. So,
And you chose Kickstarter over something like Indiegogo because there's more people on Kickstarter? Like, what was
that? It's mainly that's where the community is. I like the idea that if you, on Kickstarter, if you don't, especially for this project, if you don't get your whole goal, you don't get anything. Because especially for season two, you see we're at 11,000 right now. We couldn't make it for 11,000. So it doesn't matter if we raise that much. If we don't raise the whole thing, we can't do it. So I like that in this particular instance. There are some, like I do a series called Robot Ninja and Gay Guy, which is episodic. So we could just film one or two episodes of that show and then come back for more funding. But for this one, we have to shoot it all at once.
Right. So it makes sense to do it all or do nothing. And do you find the community tends to help? I would imagine the community helps. That those who've backed it, who want to see if this thing grow, they're probably out there really working for you right now too. Right?
Yeah, a lot of people are. We kind of got swallowed. I made a gamble on this first season. We're in our last week of fundraising, and as you can see, we're nowhere near our goal. So we're in serious danger of not meeting our goal. But we and that was my. It was a calculated decision because we had some news. I mean, things like Robert Picardo joined the cast and Chase Masterson, Mayim Bialik from Big Bang Theory is the voice of my time machine, which you can actually see a little bit behind me. My place is a mess because I'm reorganizing. that's big news to us, for those people to see such quality in our first season that they'd want to join our second. Unfortunately, we didn't get a lot of press off of that, so the idea was if we did get some press, that would carry us into Comic-Con, and we'd be able to ride that wave a little bit more. Unfortunately, the reverse happened, where Comic-Con just kind of ate us. and once we got too close to Comic-Con, then nobody wants to cover this smaller story when all this, huge... X-Men and
Walking Dead and everything else.
That's a really good point to share with folks, mm-hmm. that you can be eclipsed. It's better to be the new kid on the block or the big fish in the little pond.
Yep. Yeah. Timing was important, and like I said, that was a calculated choice, and it didn't work out in this time. But the cool thing about it is that there's no reason we can't just run the Kickstarter again. After this first one ends, we also made this. I made the decision to roll out the news about our guest stars in the course of the Kickstarter in order to try to maintain attention, I guess. And but now, if we start the Kickstarter fresh, we'll have all that news up front, so everybody will know from the first day. Robert Picardo is on board, and Chase Masterson, and Mayim Bialik, and we have a couple other guest stars who we can't confirm yet. We also have the prequel episode itself, which will be ready in shortly. We're almost done with the edit, and then we just have to do scoring and ADR and sound effects and stuff like that. So that's coming soon.
And I'm guessing the Kickstarter is just enough of what you need to make this production happen, right?
It's actually minimum. I got a budget from my producer actually yesterday, And his budget, I can thousand is what his number is.
I'm sorry, so, we just muted out briefly right when you were about to give the number.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize I couldn't switch away. The budget he sent me was something like 190,000. I can't look exactly, right. But that's so we're paring that down to our minimum budget of the 125. Right. I mean, and that is even not quite right because Kickstarter takes its percentage. You have to account for things like taxes and shipping for perks, right. Production of perks. So
there's a lot to think about.
Whole lot to go through.
And if not for Kickstarter, let's say you did this on your own, is there enough, and there's been a lot of talk and controversy perhaps out there about what the revenue earning potential is on YouTube. I mean, do you think YouTube is going to be a viable option for folks from a revenue standpoint?
I don't necessarily think it has to be YouTube, but I think that the idea that bringing your content directly from yourself to your fans through online distribution is going to be viable. I think that we're going to have to rethink budgets a little bit, and I don't think we're going to have any big stars as far as, people aren't going to get giant paydays like Charlie Sheen or, Tom Cruise anymore. But I think more people will be able to earn a living, and I think it's going to require people to wear a lot more hats. Like, I can't just be an actor. I have to be an actor and a writer and a producer and a caterer sometimes. Right.
Steer and row, right?
Yeah. You have to wear more of those hats. And I think that it's also going to require you to think more about ways you're bringing in revenue. It's not just advertising. It's merchandise and it's public appearances. It's signing autographs or whatever. Those are the ways you'd be able to bring in money. And I think, actually, one of the things that excites me is the return to sponsorships. I think I don't see it happening as much yet, but I think that that'd be a very smart thing if we go back to kind of this early television model where companies would sponsor a series.
Like the soap operas, right?
Yeah. Or even, way early television did that. And I think that the cost benefit for companies is actually pretty good. You can sponsor a web series for $100,000, and you get, if you pick the right series, you can get 1 million views. And that's a pretty good return for investment.
Oh, sure, especially on what really is a minimal investment when you compare it to television. So that's really cool. And where can people find what you're working on in the show and everything?
The best place to find it is you can go to theinspector.tv and find the show itself. You can see the entire first season and the trailer for the second season, which is so amazing. And then you can also engage with us on Facebook at facebook.com/untitledwebseries. One thing we just released, which I squee every time I see it, is the Christopher Jones, who is a comic book artist. He does Young Justice for DC Comics, and he does a couple titles for Marvel, too. He did a comic book cover for us is just the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. And we're giving that away as a print to donors for the Kickstarter campaign.
That's really
cool. That I think we posted to our Facebook page, but I think it's also on the Kickstarter. I should put it definitely on the Kickstarter if it's not there.
That's cool. So it's neat how much enthusiasm you get from people who are in the traditional production world here who just want to be a part of something like this. It's independent.
Oh yeah. I mean the love that we've got from fans and professionals alike is really extraordinary and so heartening. I mean, humbling to me, because I'm just a small kid from Wisconsin who moved out to LA to try to chase the dream, and so for me to be able to pull this off is wonderful.
It's awesome. Well, we hope you stick around, by the way, because we're going to go into the rest of our news here. But
yeah, absolutely. Let's chat.
Really neat stuff, and I hope people can check it out and chip in a couple bucks to that Kickstarter, see if we can get things moving for you. So,
we've got special prizes for people, by the way. Once we get to the end, everybody is going to get something, even if you only donate a dollar.
Oh, cool. So, hey, get in there. Get in there. Give some money. 5 days to go, and I bet you people will love what they see. So that's cool stuff. So Travis, have you ever sent anything via FedEx?
Yes, I have.
And Tim sent this over to me earlier. So apparently somebody was parked in a car in New York City and was watching a FedEx employee essentially tossing boxes into
into the truck, and I could just think of like something completely fragile and breakable, like the tapes for, you know, a production or something, just getting tossed around. So Tim, what happened after that?
All hell broke loose, and it's on TV again. But there is a response that FedEx did, and some people are saying the response is a good thing that FedEx took a handle on it. And you'll have to go into our show notes to see that response.
That is right. Go to our Google Plus community, and we'll have it in there. But FedEx has made good on it, and it looks like if it gets to Reddit, then you're really in trouble. It's become like the new consumer watchdog segment on the news. So check it out, and we will take a look at that. So Tim, I was trying some stuff on YouTube. As you know, I'm like I said at the outset here, I'm nearing 1,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel. So I'm about 30 away, and when that happens, I'm going to be able to get access to YouTube Live, and I'll talk about that next week. At the rate I'm going, I'll probably be there by next Saturday. So one of the things that I noticed is that I was trying to get more subscriptions and more opportunities for people to subscribe. And one of the ways you can do that is this InStream thing. Have you heard of this?
I have heard that My Damn Channel is using it. So they have like the special premium account, and they're working with that. They've used it on a couple of shows that they do, but I haven't had hands on with it.
So it's kind of neat. It's real simple, and it's something really, really simple. But what it does is it can put a little bug on your channel, so that while it's playing, if somebody mouses over the bug, it'll put a subscribe button right in the middle of the video stream.
Wow.
Doesn't work on mobile, but it works on the web.
Yeah,
nothing works on mobile.
Are annotations ever going to work on mobile?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's frustrating, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
Because more people are consuming on the iPad now.
And that's how I'm watching it most of the time. Travis, do you have a way of seeing where people mostly are consuming your content?
You know, I do. And mobile accounts for well over 30% of my views. So it's definitely an important it's an important place to address that. And not just mobile, but also increasingly via their television. Like, I'm watching now via my PS3 now that PlayStation finally got a good YouTube player. And
right.
That's great, but there's no way to engage with the videos that way.
No, there isn't. And what's really frustrating is that all of these TV-based solutions, and we'll talk about another one in a minute, they all work differently. So Apple TV works differently than it does on PlayStation 3, than it does on the Wii, and it's there's some basic conventions there like subscriptions and that kind of thing, but by and large there's no consistency to it. But We'll see how that develops. Maybe we'll hear something, Tim, at VidCon, which is where you'll be headed next week. So a lot of excitement around VidCon.
Yeah, there's quite a build-up to VidCon. Wednesday night, TubeFilter is going to be having a pre-VidCon party down in Anaheim to kick things off. And then Thursday is Industry Day, so a lot of blokes like me will be pontificating on panels about all the things we know about the video. And then there are different tracks like fan panels on Friday and Saturday. Now, last year, our friend Bernie Sue had a panel where young women were lined up out the door, around the corner, down the hall to get in, and some people didn't get in to see. But what Bernie does is really cool, is he uses VidCon as a way to announce new things to the fans. And he's got a great style of doing it. What he does is he will, the panel will start and he'll open it up to questions and he'll wait till somebody asks the question that he knows they're going to ask. And he's like, why don't you should mention that? I just happen to have some of our new stars for next season right here, right now. Would you like to meet them for the first time? And the crowd goes wild and then
That's
he walks
awesome.
Them out, you know. It's great. I mean, he's really got the showmanship down, and VidCon is all about the fans. So there are just tons and tons of screaming 13, 14, and 15-year-old girls that are there with their moms, and if you have a show that appeals to that crowd, that VidCon is the place to be.
It's so bizarre. And it's funny, too, because I think a lot of the world isn't aware of what's actually happening there. I think brands and some of the more savvy folks are, but it seems like it's this little, it's a big kept secret in the industry. Travis, do you make it out to VidCon?
I have every year so far. I don't have my ticket for this year, so I don't know what I'm going to do. Last year,
out in the lobby, you'll be fine. You know,
yeah, that's a lot of what I'll end up doing. There's a couple of events that I have to go to, so I'll be down there. But whether or not I can actually get into the convention is another story.
And this is like the second year it's been sold out early, right? It's
yeah.
Did it sell out last year? Because last year was its first year at the Anaheim Convention Center, where it went in order to have more room.
Yeah.
Yep. So I think they're going to need to do some expansion. So, wow. Well, have fun in the lobby. I'm sure you'll...
LobbyCon,
exactly. The non-conference, right? But we'll see how that goes. So next week, Tim will have an update for us on what happened at VidCon, if he can still hear with all that screaming going on. This week on YouTube, we kind of alternate back and forth between looking at the top channels and some of the top videos. This week, we're going to look at the top videos because the top channels were exactly the same this week as they were last week. So number five was a kind of a neat video of underwater bullets being fired in a swimming pool by a couple of British guys. I didn't know they could fire guns where they're from, but at least in a swimming pool, no less. So I don't know if that was quite legal anywhere, but they were doing it, and they were one of those high-speed cameras. And a friend of mine he's like really into this thing. He works for an engineering company, and they get lent these Phantom cameras all the time. So he had found some video that a guy had sent him of like some really super slow-mo bullet footage, and he put it on YouTube, and it got picked up by Gizmodo, and he had about 5 or 6 million views. The guy that sent him the video was pissed, like majorly pissed, because he was getting inundated with people asking him what he used for the soundtrack. You know, this guy's like,
that's what you want.
Yeah, right. This guy's just like, you know, this engineer who had made this video to demonstrate some of the products that he was selling or whatever. And next thing you know, he's like, his inbox is shut down. Like the whole world stopped for this poor guy in Germany because this video went viral like overnight. So. It's bizarre, and because it was all, you know, not his footage, my friend couldn't make any money on it. But I think he got like 2 or 3 million views on this thing, and it's still up and it's still collecting views, but it's pretty wild. So the second one, number four, is a really great example of an effective YouTube comedy video. It's all of like 30 or 40 seconds long. It's cat sees owner after 6 month leave. So you've seen all these feel good videos of dogs coming or soldiers coming home to their dogs after a long deployment, and they're tear jerkers, and Travis is laughing because I think he just saw the punchline of this, right? So,
well, you don't need to. You just got to know what the cat.
So not to spoil it, but the cat doesn't give a rat's ass that this guy is home.
I didn't get the joke until you kind of explained it, but yeah.
And it's a great, and this is like 4 or 5 million views, and I think anything with a cat or a dog in it will do well. So it's funny we don't see more web series starring dogs, because I think that they are instant hits no matter what you do. Number three is a video of a whale almost eating a diver. So if you're into killer whales and people getting swallowed up by fish, go ahead. Well, mammals, anyway, but check it out. They survived. Number two is a really powerful piece about an 11-year-old Yemeni girl. Her name is Nada Al-Adal, and she was fleeing Yemen because she was about to be forced into marriage with a much older man, and it's kind of heart-wrenching. But worth watching, so we can, you know, kind of try to put an end to this kind of stuff. So check that out at number two. And number one, and this is interesting, this is the tragic train crash in Spain of that high-speed train. And, you know, Tim and Travis, I think there has not been a news event in the last 8 or 9 months that hasn't had something captured on video. It's been, I mean, every event, you name it, the plane crash in San Francisco, the Southwest plane that lost its landing gear on landing. There was a guy recording the landing.
I haven't seen the royal birth yet.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they could.
I think
have,
The Onion covered that one pretty well, though. The Onion has pictures up of that.
There you go.
Well, I think any event where there's people around, there's cameras everywhere, and we're capturing this thing. And it's just that
one's pretty amazing, though. The Spanish train crash is.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I mean, it's horrible. You know, 90 some people died, but to watch that massive train come off the tracks at high speed, and I guess the driver got arrested on Friday, and he posted on his Facebook that he's really into speed, and he has different screen grabs of speedometers.
Really?
So this guy's a little nutty.
Wow. Well, that's a little scary. And it's kind of scary that nobody saw that before before he crashed the train. We had a train crash here in Connecticut. We have a commuter rail that goes from Connecticut to New York City. And that was not as bad of an accident, but some people were still seriously injured. And the crash wasn't caught on video, but there were a couple of skateboarders with GoPros who had happened upon it right after it happened.
Wow.
And you can imagine the language being displayed on that video. But, you know, it's just amazing. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what's funny is that when there's been so much attention on Google Glass and the privacy implications of it. Meanwhile, all these major news events are being recorded, A, with security cameras, or B, with smartphone cameras. And it's just it's remarkable just how much is getting out there. And also of the need to kind of make sure that if you do capture footage like this, there's value to it, and don't just give it away to a TV network if they come calling. So,
I did, by the way, interesting side note on Google Glass. I saw my first Google Glass actual person wearing one at Comic-Con, and I walked up next to him, and I said, "Okay, Glass, take a picture," and it did. So, interesting.
They're easily hijacked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a pair. I was invited to be an I sent them back. I just couldn't find a use for them, but I had a pair. Pretty neat, but you know what? You stand out, and it's a major behavioral change for people to make, I think, for this thing to become more popular as a consumer product. But yeah, and it's easily hijacked, because my wife would be talking to me, and the glass would just start going ballistic and sharing things, and it's needs a little bit of work. So
it needs to be able to have some sort of voice print ID or something, I think.
Yeah, or some way to know that you're the one talking to it. Because
speaking of hijacking, there is a video that I think might go viral. I don't know if it will or not, but they show how a car's computer, you know, new cars all have computers in them, can be hijacked via a hacker. And so it's pretty amazing. This guy is, he's along for the test drive. And they can do anything in the car. They can make the horn honk. They can make the brakes go out. They can change the acceleration. They can change the steering. They can steer the car with a computer. And this was like just a Prius that they were doing it on.
Wow. So,
bad as that, did you hear that they managed to hack into like pacemakers and medical devices?
Oh, right. And the guy that did it died.
Wow.
Did he?
Yeah, he died suddenly this week. He was about to go to – this week, the reason why we're seeing all these hacking videos is DEF CON and Black Hat are both the hacker conventions. They're meeting in Las Vegas. And if you're in Las Vegas, turn your Wi-Fi off now, because they will –
they will find you.
They will hack you. It's just part of the game of attending one of these conferences. But, he was slated to make a keynote presentation, I think, at Black Hat about how he could overload these pacemakers, and he died suddenly, I think, about a day or two ago.
That seems like a Dan Brown novel right there.
Yeah, really tragic and scary on so many levels. But yeah, so this week we're going to see a lot of this this hacking stuff there, and we'll see where that goes. But there's some other YouTube news. Universal Music and Russell Simmons, according to The Guardian, are going to launch a YouTube-focused music label, which kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So get your music on.
Don't let those Justin Biebers get away.
No, exactly. And Vevo is like, when we look at the top 10 channels on TubeFilter, Vevo is occupying most of those positions this week.
Always.
So it's big money. It's where a lot of kids are listening to music these days, because it's free and available. So,
but it's interesting to think that the music no longer can be thought of as just audio.
That's true.
Yep. So now you have to have video as part of the component for a song. I think it's interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah,
and what's
a big comeback for the video business, the music video business.
Without question.
Deathbed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, I mean, Vevo even, it's only your singles that get videos. Now, if you've got an online or music, YouTube music video, YouTube music company, you have to have a video for every song, which that's a big difference, I think.
Yeah. So. And it's good for production folks, that's for sure, because there's plenty of work now to be had. And it's funny, we're all old enough to remember when MTV actually used to play music videos. But
are we?
Yeah, I don't know. I remember it. There used to be like VJs and music videos on MTV. It was revolutionary. Speaking of hooking stuff up to your television, so have you heard of the Chromecast?
I have. I kind of want to get one, but they're sold out.
Yeah, I was looking on Best Buy near me had one.
They're so expensive.
Yeah,
$35.
Yeah, man, that's a lot of pennies. I have to roll them all up individually. It takes forever.
It takes a while to get it together, but it's cool.
Yeah, device. I'm sorry. I'm going to wait for my new Xbox. All right.
The Chromecast cats. Excuse me.
He's all choked up.
I'm all choked up over this thing.
He really wants one.
I want one badly. Well, here's the thing. There was one. Apparently, the Best Buy that was about 20. Everything for me, by the way, is 45 minutes away. So the Best Buy that's 45 minutes away had one in stock, and I was going to run out and grab one after the show, and then I just checked, and it's gone. So, but it's a $35 HDMI dongle that you plug into the side of your television, and you can stream stuff from Chrome to it. So kind of like an Apple TV, but I think it works a little bit differently, and it's designed around, at this point, YouTube and Netflix. And initially, the deal was if you bought this thing, even if you were a Netflix subscriber, you get 3 months of Netflix for free. So the net cost is like $11.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they stopped the Netflix offer because it's been too popular, really? Apparently. So, so that's the end of that. But still, $35 is a lot cheaper than other options. It works with iOS and Android too. So I will get one of these things, and I will talk about it when I finally acquire one. So we'll see when that happens. But another thing that's popped up on the news this week from TubeFilter is the subscribe is the new like, and how YouTube is becoming more like Facebook. And we've kind of alluded to this before, in that, you know, Google's been struggling to build Google Plus up to a viable platform. But meanwhile, they have probably the hottest social media property there is, and arguably hotter than Facebook, which is YouTube. So, Travis, how do you engage people on YouTube versus your Facebook and other channels? Is it harder?
I've struggled with that because of the change. I was actually just talking with someone last night about how YouTube used to be a genuine social network, and I have friends that I only knew on YouTube, and then YouTube Google kind of squashed that when they started focusing more on companies and bigger media outlets, including music videos. And now that they're incorporating Google Plus, I haven't figured it out yet, because I've been out of the production. You know, we've been doing these big productions, whereas I used to do weekly content and weekly vlogs, and we're actually about to get back into that, but I haven't yet jumped in. So, yeah, I'm a little bit nervous about that change and how it's different now.
Because one thing that's been interesting as I've been playing with this stuff, so I got on Google Plus early, and when you get on one of these social networks early, you get a lot of followers, but they don't do anything. Like, I've got like 3,000 people following me on Google Plus, and there's never any engagement, though. It's bizarre. Like, I've done stuff where I've even posted and said, hey, who the heck are you people? You know, like, what is it about me that you find so interesting? Because I certainly don't know what it is, and nobody responds. So I guess
it's just a land grab, right?
Everybody, yeah.
They grabbed all the land, follow him.
Right.
And nothing.
Then it's crickets. And now
even subscribers doesn't equal views anymore.
Right.
I mean, and it hasn't for a long time, but you look at someone like What the Buck, who's got 1 million subscribers, and he gets 60,000 views maybe for his videos.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's
1%.
Yeah,
well, it's changing everything. I mean, just like with us signing in for the Hangout, it changes every week. It's the same thing for viewers on YouTube every week. Every time some little thing is different.
And what's funny is that I'll get, like, if people really like a video that I did, and Travis, so you know, like, what I've been experimenting with is I've been doing gadget reviews, and when I do like a gaming thing, like an Ouya console or something that is of interest to gamers, I get a lot of engagement. And what they all do is when they really like something, they're like, subbed, you know, like, that's, I'm subbing you as a like, you know, thanks for doing what you're doing. Here's a tip. And you're right. I don't get, I get maybe 1% of my subscribers watch one of my newer videos when they come out.
Yeah. Well, there's an apartment building now in Venice Beach, California, kind of near the old YouTube place, and they're now taking subscribers as payment for rent. So you can,
seriously?
No.
Okay. There's, you know, stranger things have happened. So and it's early, so I'm probably more gullible than normal. But that's I could see it happening. So we'll go through the movies real quick. What a Now, we went from, by the way, this is now we're moving into the cinema area of media. They were raving about how this was the hottest summer ever, and it was like unbelievable box office numbers. And now we're talking week two of the biggest doldrums in Hollywood history. So, Tim, what kind of industry is this? Is this how it usually is?
This is a flaky industry, man. You can't predict anything.
I mean, it's like they were bullish. They were like running with the bulls here, and then now it's like, you know, the Armageddon's coming. What's up?
Yeah, well, times are changing, you know.
Yeah.
I think you really need something amazing to get people at a movie theater now. With all the other options they have for entertainment, you've got to have something that people know, they trust, they like. And if you look at, you know, the top five, what do we have? Number five, Grown Ups, 11.4 million. This is, how many weeks has this one been out?
Did week it open three. This, week? This is
week
the third
three.
Week.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's on its way out. Turbo 3D at 3.1 million. Nobody knows. That's not like an established franchise. Despicable Me, that's an established franchise.
I love established French fries.
Yeah, me too. I could go for some French fries.
Awesome, hard thing. And Despicable Me has done fairly well. Then The Conjuring, a horror movie that has got some underground buzz, is doing okay at 22.1 million, but not you know, gangbusters. And then number one, Wolverine at 55 million. Normally, you'd want a film like this to be closer to 100 million. You know, with an established franchise that people love.
And you know what's funny is I was reading our friend, or not our friend, the friend that we'd love to have, Nikki Fink, who we just read about on Deadline.com. You know, her everyone's postulating that this was going to be the big hit of the summer, and because there was no clear competition for it, established franchise, all their old style metrics lined up perfectly on this thing, and then to release with only $55 million, everyone's just like scratching their heads as to what the heck is going on.
Well, it's also like the week after Comic-Con, right?
Mm. So really, you think that took that Comic-Con is taking that much air out of the room, even for a film like this?
Well, you know, people have to get their fix, right? And when they get their entertainment fix, they get their entertainment fix. And, you know, maybe they just weren't jonesing enough.
Why is no one talking about the fact that nobody liked the last Wolverine movie? I mean, how is that not part of the equation? You know, you say everything lines up, but that has to be part of the equation, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So they let down last time. They don't want to make the investment this time.
Yes. I mean, why would anybody, you know, if X-Men 4 was made and Brett Ratner was directing it, do you think it would be a huge success?
Jackie Chan was in it. It would be awesome.
But, Jackie Chan and Justin Bieber, right?
But to me, I think the bigger story, the thing that I am, I think, focusing on for this summer is that this summer has been a year where movie studios have been focused on analytics for movies. They have there's a service out, and I can't remember what it's called, but basically they will they use big data to analyze scripts before they ever even go into production. And studios have been using it to judge whether a script is good enough to produce. And they'll change it. They'll change the actors, the actresses, the settings, the action pieces, the scenes, whatever, based on this data analysis.
So is that based on the numbers, words in the script or something? How does that work? No
it's
kidding.
It's based on all sorts of things.
Did they use that on Lone Ranger?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They use, I mean, apparently all of the big tentpole movies this year, I'm trying to find the name of the service, but, I mean, you can Google it. You can try to Google movie script analysis, and you can probably find it. But the point is that two things. One is obviously it doesn't work because it doesn't equal success. I mean, the guy was saying that, you know, previously the scripts that he's analyzed have, he's been able to predict within $10 million how much money they'll make. Hmm. And so that trend has completely fallen apart this summer. And secondly, I think it really shows why the good content is on television or on the web.
Or on Netflix now.
Yeah, well, I consider the web television because, I mean, by definition, television is a broadcast medium, mm-hmm. and on the web, we are broadcasting things out there. So,
right, and I think it's very true. And the data is, I think, a lot is different for television in that you have probably more of it because so much of viewership is demographically calculated, and there's a lot of probably tried and true practices that have come out of it. Netflix in particular is sitting on a gold mine. I bet you they could probably make a lot of money selling some of what they've learned out to other folks in the industry, because I think they haven't really missed yet on any of their own productions, right? I mean, it's been a win-win, and their profitability is measured in a very different way also. It's been interesting to watch all that happen. So,
well, did Netflix do Hemlock Grove? That's Hemlock.
Yeah, they did. They did. I don't know how
was that particularly successful? I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah.
That was a horror thing, right?
Yeah.
It feels like, I think I heard it kind of like a horror soap opera type of thing.
I haven't checked that one out.
More like Passions to me.
Because Orange is the New Black I've been watching. That's been really good. And House of Cards was just amazing. So I'm sure they'll have a couple misses along the way too. But they are
beating HBO. That seems to be their goal.
And I think they're
how do you mean they're beating them?
Subscriber base. So they're getting more subscribers now than HBO.
Okay.
And the CEO of Netflix had an interesting statement the other day. He said he wanted Netflix to become he wanted to get ahead of HBO before HBO became Netflix. So he sees that direction going, and they're still tied to that. So
as long as HBO can't independently offer their service apart from a subscription to cable.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going. I mean, there's no way they can.
Yeah. No, there's no way they can. And they're ceding market. You know, they're not necessarily in market share yet, because I subscribe to both right now just because I like that HBO Go thing. But there will come a time when HBO's attachment to the old industry is going to hurt them. Especially Netflix now is as big as they are and has the production wherewithal now too. So we'll see where that goes. We'll wrap up though with our app and tip of the week. App of the week. Actually, we kind of covered the tip of the week at the outset with that in stream thing. But the app of the week is an app and a piece of hardware, Tim. So this is our latest little gadget that got sent my way. It is a USB stick, but it is a USB stick with Wi-Fi that connects to your iPhone or iPad. And where this might be useful is that if you've got like a lot of footage you're recording on your iPhone, I've been doing a lot of like little pickup shots for my product reviews with it. It has, first of all, a removable memory card on there, so you can load up a bunch of stuff on there. And if you're out in the field and you fill up your iPhone, you can just dump the footage to this thing, wipe out the iPhone, and start from scratch. So you can have a kind of a way to offload without having to plug into anything. So I thought that was kind of a neat little $60.
So how could you do it your iPad as well, right?
Yeah, so you could do it from the iPad.
So how does it connect? What connector do you use?
So no connector. It's all Wi-Fi. This, by the way, is a SanDisk product, by the way. And it's neat because it will connect to your network. So if you...
Is it powered by itself?
Does it
have its own power?
Yeah, it's got a little battery in there. It runs about 4 hours. And if you plug it into something, obviously it'll go longer. It's from SanDisk. It's called the SanDisk Wireless Flash Drive. And neat little gadget and a great little way to just get stuff off your mobile devices. And I think as our cameras improve on those devices, having something like this to offload is kind of handy without any cables. And then you can just pop it into your computer and you're good to go there. So
let me just summarize. You have 4 hours from the time you unplug it from your computer, take with you to wherever you're going and recording footage. You have how much?
No, it has four hours of battery life. So you can charge it and turn it off.
Right.
Oh, okay. So it does have an off switch. Great. Yeah. So you turn it on. You can download. How much data storage is on it?
This one has 32 gigs, and it's a removable card. So you could, I think the max it'll support is 32, but you could get a bunch of 32 gig cards.
Swap out cards. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you just bring that back and plug it into your computer via USB and offload the footage.
Exactly.
Is it USB 3 or...
Unfortunately, it's just two. So,
or you could just take the SanDisk cards out and run them into your computer.
Right, you could do that. So you could pop it into like a USB 3 reader or something like
But they look like they were micro SD or something.
Yeah, it's micro SD cards. So not the fastest little cards in the world, but it's kind of a neat little way to get your stuff out of there. But this one comes with a little UDMA 1 card, and I measured it about 10 megabytes per second. Right, so it's not the fastest card in the world, but. For just doing offloads and that kind of thing, kind of a neat little backup tool. And then last week we talked about how Google Plus is taking 1080p video under 15 minutes for free, essentially. No storage ding on that. So a great little place to load your B-roll in there. So, neat little tools coming out there to help us get that footage stored, because the B-roll storage is can be a fortune. So, another neat little tip there. So that'll do it, I think, for this edition of Behind the Video. Travis, thanks for joining us. Really,
my pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And, where can people find you?
I am, like I said, the inspector.tv is where the show is. I am the Travis Ritchie on Twitter and facebook.com/untitledwebseries. And that's probably the best place. From there, you can find everything else.
Great. Awesome. And Tim, where can people find you, Tim?
At One Tim Street on Twitter.
See you can see him roaming around VidCon next week and spare his hearing.
We do have, I should mention, we have early this year, because we got picked up by The Collective as our YouTube network, we did have to switch channels. So I'm no longer at my old channel where I had like 15,000 subscribers there. Now I'm over at at Travis Ritchie, youtube.com/TravisRitchie. So people should make sure they subscribe there for all of our new content.
I will sub right now.
Thank you.
Connected there, so
I'll find you and get back get you closer to that 1,000 sub mark.
Good. I'll be 29 to go if you do that for me today, so I appreciate that. You can find me at lonseidman, lonseidman.com. that will link to our Google Plus profile. You can also find our Google Plus community at behindthevideo.com, so you can go on there and talk about some stuff. We're going to be back next week. Maybe we'll have to see what Tim's VidCon, a lot of cons going on, what his VidCon schedule is looking like. But we'll be back next week, and I think we'll try to up the production value a little bit and try to make this show look a little bit different than every other hangout on the air. So give us a shot with that. We'll see what happens. This is Lon Seidman. This is Behind the Video, and we are a wrap. Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.